We're going to talk about vendors and MSPs and that relationship, which can sometimes be a little bit of a tricky, crazy, whirlwind, awesome and crazy bad at the same time relationship out there. And the title of this week's one, we called it, was What to Do When Your Vendors Compete Against Your MSP. And I'm sure anybody that's run an MSP or an IT company for any period of time out there listening will have had the situation where you have one of your vendors, one of your tier one vendors out there or tier two vendors out there that goes and competes with you and goes and gives cheaper pricing and cheaper proposals out to your clients that you've already brought the deal in on for their particular equipment for. And so we see it happen all the time. It happened in my MSP. It's happened in many MSPs. And so today we're just going to talk about when that happens, what to do, what we see behind the scenes of the way some of that stuff works and whatnot. Now, Richard asked me very politely to not hand the reins to him first because he's wildly passionate about this topic. But I'm going to hand the reins to Richard first because because he said that. And for a specific reason, in that Richard, as most of you will know, obviously owned and ran an MSP. And one of his core tenets in his MSP was that, or one of his core values in his MSP, which was similar to ours, was to treat your vendors very, 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 very well because they're obviously the lifeblood of your business, one of the lifebloods of your business, and treat them as well as you treat your staff and your employees. Your staff and your clients. But also now, because Richard has in his current business two types of clients. He's got MSPs and he's got vendors. So he's seeing both sides in there right now at the moment. And so I'm going to hand over to you, Richard. You've probably got a world of thoughts around MSPs and vendors and the whole sometimes this kind of relationship out there. Let's unleash the floodgates.
We were having a little bit of a laugh and a joke before we came on when we discussed this topic. So I think for those of you that follow my work, and I know, you know, I'm new to many people here, but I'm very outspoken about the relationship between vendors and MSPs being just that, a relationship, a partnership working together. I know that that doesn't match up with many MSPs' perception of their relationship with the vendors. But if I rewind a little bit, we'll talk about the bad first of all. So being a former MSP and myself, and I think this goes for anyone, and I'm going to call them out here on it because it happened to me. Hopefully that practice has changed. But back in the day when we partnered up with the likes of HP and Dell to provide hardware and to put together big proposals and projects for clients, more than once, unfortunately, we had a situation where the client would phone us and say, we've had a phone call from somebody at HP/Dell, and they're offering us what you've said, but for 15% cheaper. And we're like, oh, thanks for that. Yeah. So let us know in the chat if anybody's experienced that. I hope that's not still the situation that's happening. But back in the day, you know, people did used to experience that. And we'll see whether that's still the case.
Still happens. I've heard a number of them recently.
Yeah. Yep. Now, of course, that's, you know, we've got two different types of vendors in our sphere, in our world, haven't we? We've got the mainstream vendors. If I talk about them, the, you know, you've got the old school Dells and people who provide hardware, and they typically have two sides to their business, don't they? They have a channel business, channel being, you know, selling to MSPs, the likes of us on the call today. And then they also have a direct business. So they will go directly to consumers, directly to businesses to sell their wares. That's always a red flag for me. That's always a difficult line to navigate because the two are in conflict with one another. Why would you want to go through a partner when the partner's going to take a margin, going to take a slice of the business, and you can go directly? There's lots of reasons why they would want to do that. But so that's the first type of vendor. The other type of vendor that we're going to talk about more broadly today, of course, is MSP vendors. So the majority of vendors that you work with probably only have a channel program. So they only sell to MSPs. For me, that's a good situation there because you don't get that conflict. You don't get your vendors then saying, oh, thanks for building the relationship for us, Mr. MSP, Mrs. MSP. Now we're going to go directly and cut out the middleman. So there's two types of vendors there, and we can talk about the relationships there, but I just wanted to sort of throw that open in the first instance, Nigel, because it's really important, I think, that we're clear between the different types of vendors that are out there, direct and partner-based as well.
Agreed.
The relationship between like the vendor and the direct and the retail and those kind of things. There was an interesting discussion I had. I think it might have been one of the tech events a few years ago in terms of how that's actually dealt with from a distributor's point of view. So actually with, at least here in the UK, for HP, for example, HP's retail stock actually gets sold to, I think it's Ingram Micro. I think Ingram Micro stock all of the UK HP retail hardware. And so for the issues that we often had with HP when they would go and sell direct or sell it cheaper, when we went to go back to HP and say, well, look, can you do a deal, Reg? Can you like get the price down, whatever it might be? For some specific items, they actually had to go back and buy the stock back off of Ingram Micro to get it back out of their distribution system to put back to HP to then sell to us as a partner. It was just ridiculous. But it's interesting to know the definitions of they, you know, how disconnected it actually is. It's not like it's just this big pool of kit that just gets sold in different avenues. The actual kit is pre-sold into this just distribution first and then sold on beyond then, which is why there's all sorts of issues with stock. And, you know, the retail can have stock when the disties won't have stock because it's all pre-allocated. So that's something just worth being aware of with those. But yeah, I think we can all agree everyone's had those situations of vendors approaching directly. I've heard multiple times, and you're almost stupid if you don't do this, but when you deal reg things, you deal reg to your own company rather than to the client's company, because then they don't know that the client's going to have something quoted for them.
Yeah.
So that's a very common thing.
Yeah. And I think a lot of them have picked up their game a lot in the last probably 5 to 10 years. Like it was rife back in the late 2000s, early 2010s, where it was every single deal. Like HP was horrible at it with things like all of their warranties, like care packs and all that kind of stuff. Like you go and buy it once and bang, they get the printer renewals and care pack renewals and everything that would get go direct out there. But they got so much kickback from their partners out there, which was awesome, that they did change around their internal processes and they did make it so that they stopped doing that. And after a few years, we didn't notice it for many, many years after it did happen. But Scott, are you seeing any of that in the wild happening to you right now, where you've got vendors, tier one vendors or MSP vendors or anyone competing against you for the deals that you're already essentially won out there? And or have you been
not so much? I think I definitely echo some of the comments that you guys made around like the complexity of the channel and actually getting the best price in the first place.
Oh, yeah.
So I was featured in Computer Weekly this week. I think you'll find. I know, right? My expert commentary. But Dell have announced just this week that they are standardizing and streamlining their entire partner process and the entire pricing and one incentive scheme with very clear levels across the board for everything. Because even now, it's still a complete mess. And it's just like, you know, I described it to them as just this complicated dance of knowing who to speak to, what words to say, what funding pots might be available in which quarter, and how much discount you can leverage. And like, we gave a real example, and it's a couple of years ago, but we were trying to buy £500,000 worth of server and storage kit. And, you know, the best price we could get through this particular vendor, it was IBM at the time, was £500,000. We'd gone through all of the rigmarole and it was £500,000. And then there was just one guy who in our business was a buyer. And he was like, just let me have a crack at it. I'm like, but dude, we've got the best price. We've screwed them down over this over and over again. And it's down to £500,000. It's great. It's way, way down. Just give me a minute. And he went off and he spoke to his contacts and they had some other contacts. And this is all through the same distribution channel to buy the same IBM hardware, £360,000.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
There's another 140K to be found in the deal.
Holy jeez.
And they were still making money. And we were but I battled over this to get it down to £500,000. And he's like, yeah, you got to know the right buttons to press and the right people. And but the thing is as well, like from the vendor side, like they shift in and out of roles every 12 months. People move or change or whatever. The account manager will move or change or the partner manager.
Yeah.
And so they don't know the pots and the discounts because they're fresh in role and in post. And so like having that buyer in our business was a legendary thing because he knew all the things and he's telling the new account manager, no, man, there's a pot for this, a pot for that, and a pot for this. You can get the price down. I 360K, we saved another £140,000. And so
a couple of conversations.
I'm happy Dell are saying, yeah, do you know what? We're going to simplify it, but it's endemic of the whole vendor distribution partner, you know, VAR, whatever landscape, that it's bloody difficult to get to the right price at the right time. And then throw in the mix direct and indirect, you know, channel for that vendor.
Yeah.
And them seeing, and we all know this, right? There should be walled gardens between direct and channel business. Like that user information for channel should not be passed across to the direct sales team. Why on earth would that happen? And it's just the vendors being greedy. And that is not empowering the partners then to go and win more business. Like, why am I going to go and sell more Dell kit when you're phoning up my customers? It doesn't make any sense. Now, I have the most recent time this happened was actually with a Microsoft distributor. And so that Microsoft distributor very quickly lost £250,000 a month of revenue from us because they were phoning up our customers and saying to them, hey, you know, we can do cloud migrations. We can get you. We've noticed you're still on premise. We can move you to Office 365. And I was like, whoa. You are directly competing with what we do. Yeah. That is our business. We are a cloud service provider. We are moving these people from on-premise to Microsoft 365, and we buy all of our licenses through you.
Yeah.
So all of our Splunk licensing for that on-premise exchange you're trying to get them off, we buy through you, and all of the CSP that we're trying to move them to, we buy through you. I thought, well, you know, sorry, you know, we have a direct channel as well, and we're investing in our cloud consultants, and you know, we see there's great opportunity in the cloud. I'm like, I bet you do, because you've gone from shifting into professional services, which is trampling all over what we do. And so I was like, I'm sorry, you can't carry on doing this. And do you know what they said? They said, yeah, look, your business is very important to us. And I was like, I bet it is. £250,000 of Splunk, £250,000 of CSP. It's very important to us. We'd love you to have a meeting with, you know, the directors and the MD, and we want to have a real frank conversation about this. When can you come down to Reading? And I was like, dude, I'm in Leeds. Am I going to go on a 4-hour drive to talk to you about why you're taking our customers and you're approaching them and trying to steal our business? I don't think so. If I'm important to you, you're going to come up, right? We're spending an awful lot of money a month. We're important, as you say. Oh, well, you know, yeah, they're very busy. Okay. So
stealing customers.
Within 30 days, I'd phoned up another fantastic supplier and said, this is the situation. I have roughly £250,000 of Spark, £250,000 of CSP that I'd like to move. What do you reckon? And they were, hi, hello.
By the way,
do you currently get these rebates? No, I've never heard of them. Right. Okay. Let's help you get those rebates. Do you currently get these? No, I've never heard of those either. Cool. So, not only did we get out of a terrible relationship with a distributor who was trying to approach our customers, but also we ended up netting another 8% margin on those licenses by shifting distributor.
Yeah, right.
And you're like, this is crazy.
Was already sucking up on their end.
Exactly. And so when you think you're in a great relationship and then, you know, you're doing the right thing, like I'm shoveling money your way that you don't have to work for. And you just think, I get it. It's distribution. They're making like 1%.
Yeah.
But I'm still, you know, we're doing all the work here. You're getting that 1%. That's what you make on those licenses. I understand. I understand you want consultancy and professional services. And that's
how the channel model works. Simple as that.
Yeah. You have the volume and you get 1% of it. But it was absolutely shocking to me that this would even happen. But the nice thing was, it was very easy for us to go, cool, you know, channel is channel and we can buy these from you. We can buy them from somewhere else. And we just voted with our feet and moved within 30 days.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. One of the challenges I see a lot with, particularly with disties, distributors, is that it depends on the rep that you get. Because we had ours. Mm. I mean, I'm sure everyone else has had the same situation. The rep changes more often than you like it to. That's for sure.
It's a tough role to fill.
Where they wouldn't last 6 weeks, let alone 6 months. But the biggest concern we had when moving reps was, do they understand the vendors that we sell? Do they understand all the intricacies? Do they understand the deal reg process? Because the number of times, particularly with HP or HPE on the server side of things, going through the deal reg process, and they didn't understand how it worked. And so we kind of flip-flop between sometimes we would do the deal reg and we'd kind of push everything through and then we'd ask them just for the final pricing. Sometimes they would actually do it for us because they understood it and they'd build the deal reg and build the bill of materials and push it through. But when things changed, it was just anyone's goal of like, what do we do here? And sometimes if they didn't know, it was so, so difficult. And there's one question I'm going to put to you all here. I think I mentioned it last week when we chatted. How can you, as a small, nimble MSP, compete against the bigger vendors, bigger distributors, bigger competitors.
And the Amazon. There's
one particular place, and I'm going to name drop them because they are not, when I say name drop them, Citrix. Citrix are not a nice company to be trying to sell. So the scenario is we've been selling Citrix for many, many years into lots of our clients, and we had one renewal come up. It was fairly big renewal for us. It came up. And as most kind of larger companies do, they go out, for, not for tender, but they go out and get two or three quotes. Everyone came back with the same quote. Cool. Meant we had the same deal reg pricing with Citrix. Great. Okay, cool. The client then took so long to decide that the quote that we had and everyone else had had expired. So the client eventually came back and said, yep, we want to go ahead with it now. Like, happy with the price? Yep, great. Okay. So we went back. Oh, sorry, the quote's expired. We're going to have to requote you. Requoted it. Completely different price. It bumped up by 20% or whatever it was. We went back and obviously told them the price and said, hey, sorry, you missed the boat. The price has gone up. However, the other competitor had gone back to Citrix, gone, well, no, we're going to pay that price still, the price that you originally quoted us. And they bent over and gave them the price.
Ooh,
and the wording was, because we had this sales engineer come in to meet and we spoke to them, was because, oh, we're bigger, we spend a lot more with them, so they basically do what we tell them to do.
Oh!
So oh, it's a difficult one, but yeah. How the hell do you compete against that kind of market? Oh, where it's the bigger boys get the bigger, the better deals. And yeah. People like us, the smaller MSPs, we just can't win those kind of things.
Well, Scott, you're...
There's the conundrum.
You've been both. You're the small MSP now, and you were the big MSP before in the previous role. And
I wouldn't even class myself. Not even the. I mean, we were competing against a firm that had millions and millions of turnover. They were, a Citrix shops. They had a very tight relationship with Citrix. They're like Citrix Platinum partnerships, and we were like the silver, maybe the gold level. So we were, up and coming. But it's very much. I see what's happening with a lot of distributors, and actually Tech Data. I'll sing their praises because they certainly went through a phase where. Yes, they had lots of the larger accounts on their books, but they realized actually if they could work with the smaller accounts and put some effort behind that, they could grow a lot of those smaller accounts into obviously more spend with them. And it's a lot easier to have lots of small clients for them, less risk than having just these few big players. And like Scott's had, if someone decides to up and move their spend, well, now they've just lost £500,000 worth of spend a year, whereas that's very unlikely with a lot of smaller clients. So that was my conundrum, and I don't honestly know how we could have done any different on that other than escalating it through.
Not a direct answer here, Pete, but I want to give a shout out as well to the buying groups that are out there. So, Scott, you talked about a buyer earlier on, the buyer role within the business and how well that can work for bigger MSPs. For the nimble and small and mid-sized MSPs, buying groups can also give you a little bit of that leverage, a little bit of that strength there. So Network Group here in the UK, and there's plenty out there. There's Brigantia, there's, whichever part of the world you're in, there's going to be something similar there. But the idea, let's give an example. I'm not sure. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here. It's just between you and I. But, Network Group used to have an arrangement with HP, for instance, where the tier... the discounts and the support that was given to Network Group members wasn't based on the one MSP. It was based on them all together.
Yeah.
So all together, they were like, if not the top of one of the top five, like HP partners in the UK, based on all of it cumulatively together. And the support they got, the discounts and the rebates and everything were based on that accordingly. So, a shout out for buying groups of that nature that can really help you to sort of leverage. The other thing I would say, go ahead, Pete, sorry, yeah.
Just a question on that one very quickly. So with the buying group, and we had this with some distributors, because you have the different tiers of distributors. So with the buying group, does that then not detract away from yourself as being a HP partner because you're not directly doing the sales?
I couldn't speak to that directly. I would say that most of the MSPs that I know that are part of, say, Network Group and things like that are happy with the arrangement. So they get more benefits than they would do if they went directly, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm not sure
some of the ones that I've seen with the buying groups, what they do is you've still got the relationship direct, so you can still be a silver, gold, whatever partner it is, but you just get tagged as being a part of the buying group in the back end of their CRM, which then gives you the price breaks, essentially, and whatever other things that they've got in there. So you still maintain that one-to-one relationship in there. Depends. Different vendors do it differently, but I've seen that happen a number of times with the buying groups. Mm-hmm. Scott, you were going to say something then?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, to Pete's point around how do you differentiate yourself? I think it's what we always say when we talk about this stuff. It's use your own differentiators. So, you know, for us, tin has always been tin when we were, you know, the ginormous MSP and when, you know, where we are today, and licenses are licenses. And we always aim to make minimal margin on those because they shouldn't be a factor that the client's making the decision on. If they're making the decision based purely on price, then I don't feel like we've done a great job in the sales process of you know, understanding why they would work with us. And yeah, I get it. You know, if you're buying a huge amount of server hardware, like what I talked about, that $500,000 order, yeah, do you know what? Additional discounts are going to make a big difference. But for most agile, nimble MSPs, it's going to be, you know, a small order or a small set of licenses or, you know, some small hardware. And I'd be putting minimal margin on that. And what I would be doing is making sure that our service is, you know, is absolutely astounding. It does everything the client wants and more and beats the expectations of the other MSP out of the water. And that is priced fairly for them and great for you to make good margin. That's how I would approach these things. And I just think, you know, we're never going to win the race on putting minimum amounts of margin on hardware and licenses. That's just not where we're going to get paid. We're not distribution.
Yep.
And so, you know, even when we were, you know, the $200 million, but whatever MSP we were, we kind of had a static approach that was like, our basic model is 10% on tin. And they're like, oh yeah, but we're getting 45% discount. I'm like, I don't care. It's 10% on tin because we're not making our money on tin. We're going to make our money on the services. But we could, who cares? What we're going to do is end up in a bidding war then with the customer. We can get either go online and get a better price or find some refurb kit. Kit is not the interesting point here. The interesting point is the service. So 10% on tin, if we need to barter, we'll drop it to 5. I don't care. What we're going to do is charge for the services that we provide. And that's how we run things here as well. You know, that's a lesson that I learned is I don't want to barter on kit and licenses. I want to show you what we do and why it's great and why it's going to be good for you as a business, because tin comes and goes. I don't care if they buy the tin from us or not. Genuinely.
Especially with the liability. I don't know if you guys have got the same out there in the UK as what we do out here when you're reselling kit, in that you're wholly responsible for warranty and all that sort of stuff out here because you're the person that actually made the sale. And so 10% is not enough to me to be able to offset that liability that I have in the deal in there. So we were like, if we couldn't make 25 to 30 points margin out of a kit, we wouldn't sell it. We would just send them direct because I had liability out here that I had to uphold. I had to go and if there was warranty issues, I actually had to send trucks free of charge, and I had to do all of that stuff free of charge because of Australia's warranty and consumer protection laws out here. And
you and I talked about before, like I had an infamous situation where I was working with an MSP and talking about margins with them. And they, I think I've shared this with you, they said to me, oh yeah, we charge 15%. I was like, you're probably making a loss.
Yeah.
On selling hardware. Right, and they were like, what? No. Look, it shows here. So I sat with them, and over a period of 3 months, we actually, and again, this all comes back to a fundamental tenet of managed service, track your time.
Track your time. So in
once
the process,
you start tracking the time, I actually highlighted, like with the supplier, how much was spent on the order, on the sales process,
RAs,
how much was spent on order fulfillment, how much was spent on RMAs.
Yep,
and we actually worked out they were making a loss overall, 3% loss on selling hardware. So I was like, why are you selling hardware?
Either
put it up to 25-30% or let them go direct because it's not worth your while.
Yeah,
there's a little nugget you've dropped in there. Just it's not related to what we're talking about now, but just tracking the time you spend on the sales process is such a big thing that's worth doing. There was one particular example where we were selling a phone system into a client, and we were literally selling it to them for an entire year of sales effort. Multiple demos. I think we got to about the third or fourth demo where we just turned around and said, look, we've spent way too long now. We're not going to make any money now doing this. So even if we sold this to you at the price we're selling it to you, we're basically breaking even. And I think it's around about that time they decided to actually buy the phone system. But yeah, tracking your time on your sales process.
Thing. People just don't realize. And I think all of us probably fall for the mistake of just assuming that we can't get much margin in product resale as well. And so when I started in my journey, I was like, oh, like I hear other MSPs saying it's hard to get 10%. So I went, it's hard to get, like my belief then was it's hard to get 10%. So I always just quoted 10% margin and everything. Then I started after years getting around other MSPs that are going, oh, dude, we get 30 to 40 points. What the heck are you doing getting 10 points? And I went, oh, maybe my beliefs need to change a little bit here. And they did. And for many, many years, probably 6 or 7 years, we were getting 20 to 40 points on average across every single thing we sold. And it was a belief thing more than anything else out there. It was just that I just didn't know that you could go and get that out there. But to your question as well, Pete, around how does the small person do that? I think one of the other things that Richard touched on before is and it's not going to get you the whole way sometimes, but it will get you part of the way. It's just doubling down on the relationship with your vendors out there and just being that person. Because if you've got a vendor out there that's going to go and do that, what they did to you out there, but you've got a hot friend inside that particular vendor, then there's that adds to the chance of them going, oh, I'm going to pull away from this deal a bit, or I'm at least going to give Pete some heads up, or I'm going to do something in there as well. And I think that relationship is so darn valuable. And it's like the core value that we had in our MSP, and Richard, I know you shared this one in your MSP, was we want to be our client's favorite vendor and our vendor's favorite client. And that was a core value that we had up around the wall on everything. And we worked hard at it. It wasn't just something that we didn't take at face value. We actually worked hard to try and maintain those open relationships with vendors and disties, so that if there was situations like that happening behind closed doors, it was kind of hard for them to make those situations happen because they knew us and they liked us and they didn't like doing that kind of stuff to people they liked. And whereas if you're the MSP out there, that's always a give me more margin and I need to screw you down more and you're the dirty, nasty vendor and I'm going to scream at you every time there's a single problem out there, then when that situation comes along, the person on the other end of the line is like, oh, I can't wait to go and send this deal across to their competitor. This guy's driving me mad. And so that relationship is so darn important in it as well. It won't take you the whole way because sometimes dollars just talk very loud more than anything else. But it's going to give you a really good chance.
Can we talk about the playbook a little bit there? Because, Nige, it's worked for your MSP. It's worked for my MSP. So people say, oh, yeah, but it's just you. You've already been there and done that. Like, I am telling you, whilst everything what Nigel has just said there, the playbook that we used, and to say playbook makes it sound a little bit like this is a sales technique or whatever. It wasn't. It was just going back to the thing that we talk about every week, which is building up sustainable long-term relationships with people. So when I ran the MSP business, we used to have conversations with the account managers. We used to phone the account managers at our vendors. This is like virtually
a novel idea.
The vendor account managers, and I'm speaking to everybody out here today, they are used to phoning you seeing their number on the DDI and then sending it to voicemail or letting the office manager say, no, he's not available. So let's address that first of all. If you make the outbound call to your vendor account manager, and if you don't know who your account manager is, find out. Just get in touch and say, who's my account manager? Oh, we don't have one. Can we have one? So that's the very first step. And then we phoned our account manager and we said, hey, we just wanted to introduce ourselves, have a little chat. This is what we're doing in the business. But then we stopped talking about ourselves and we used to say to them, how can we help you? How can we become your favorite partner? And then there was a deeply awkward silence because the vendor account managers are rarely, if ever, asked this. They're usually asked, well, I want NFRs, I want marketing development funds, I want this, gimme, gimme, gimme. They're rarely asked, how can we help you? And so some of them would freak out and say, what, are you trying to headhunt me? No. We're asking, how can we help you? And the questions we asked them were, what do you get bonused on?
Yeah.
What do you get bonused on? Now, you would be surprised. You think that, and obviously for most vendors, it is the amount of licenses that are sold. But it's not just that. We found out that our account managers were often compensated on the number of new partners that came through the door. So we said, no worries at all. We're going to become your favorite partner and we're going to talk about you at all the user groups online, everywhere else. We're going to introduce people to you, Mr. or Mrs. Account Manager. The second thing was many vendor account managers said, well, actually, we get rewarded if your team achieve certifications and go through our qualifications and that, because we know it's going to lower our cost of support. So we said, no worries. We are going to commit right here today that all of our team, everyone on the team is going to go through your certification. And this blew their minds. And so going back to Nigel's point, we regularly then with big vendors, with small vendors, everything in between, I've talked on the show before that the old go-giver type phrase, that it's human nature to want to reciprocate. Yeah. Those vendor account managers were then actively keeping that antenna up to push deals across to us and to help us. And if you think, I'll say one final thing on this before I get off my soapbox. If you think this only works with small vendors and it doesn't work with big vendors, my MSP, we were about 250,000 turnover or thereabouts. I forget the exact timeline. We were the first MSP in the UK to roll out Windows 7 a year ahead of anyone else. And people say, well, how the heck did you get that deal? we became friends with them. We spoke at user group events. We helped the Microsoft community. We became somebody that when it came to, oh, we need to start beta testing Windows 7, who can we get to do this? They came to us because they needed somebody across the whole spectrum, not just big or small. So I'll get off my soapbox there, yeah. But you know, this stuff works, and it's not just me and Nigel saying this is theoretical. This stuff works.
One of the ones that I saw with Microsoft when I had my MSP was when BPOS was becoming Office 365, and that transition of the Microsoft just trying to go really bullish on Office 365 was their partner account managers getting incentivized on platform adoption in there. Right. And so the more that we as an MSP could get our clients using Office 365, the more our partner account manager was happy and to kept going and sending us deals our way because we were helping people. And Microsoft obviously knew that platform adoption tied directly into retention metrics in there. And so they were incentivizing that. And that was another one to look out for that initially you might not think, like you might think it's all about licenses, but licenses that churn are not really worth their weight in salt. If you can get them with that platform adoption and you get your partner account manager's KPIs met because of that, all for the better, which is good. The other question I just want to finish off that the particular part was there is that this is a question that I encourage all MSP, like especially nimble MSPs, to always continually think about. And that is, what would I still be a wildly, awesomely profitable MSP if I didn't resell product whatsoever? If I just had the services side of my business? And if not, then what can I do to make that happen out there? And so that doesn't matter then if you're going to have, you're going to lose deals. It doesn't matter if you've got to go down to stupid margins to compete on all the resale side of things. You're still a wildly profitable and wildly, wildly well set up MSP just on the services side alone. And I think it's a question that every MSP out there should be continually asking themselves is are we wildly profitable on services only if all of that other product side of our business just completely disappeared overnight? And if you can do that and have that as a focus, it's going to make life much easier for you. And you're going to care less when all of these dirty back of the room tactics happen, which they're still always going to happen behind the scenes. So,
can I throw something else in, Nige?
Just no.
Please. See, I have to fight for my time here when I'm not over-talking everybody else. One of the things, so we talked about like Dell and HP and that, and we're not here to, you know, to bash the big players. You know, that's not our MO. But for those of you who think that we have to provide hardware to our clients, they expect it from us. First of all, you know, to Nigel's point here, that might be an assumption on your part. So I would definitely investigate that. But if you decide you do want to provide hardware, Dell, HP, you know, all of these players, they're not the only players in town. You know, and I've talked about this, and this has worked very well for us with internet service providers when I ran the MSP. Instead of working with the big ISPs who piled them high, sold them cheap sort of thing, and the support was accordingly, you can actually go to, you know, boutique and other hardware vendors as well. So, like, if you're providing PCs, servers, workstations, that type of thing, there's a member of the tech tribe, Utopia Computers, based in Scotland, who do these insanely awesome kit with amazing after support and things like that. So if you are going down that road of providing hardware, have a look around and see how you can differentiate yourself from the competition by not just providing the same beige or black boxes that everybody else does, but by providing some really kick-ass awesome equipment.
Yeah.
And it might be that you go to a supplier like Craig Hume at Utopia or PC Specialist, whoever it might be, to differentiate yourself from the competition.
There's one that I do hear a lot about in the MSP space over in the US as well called Carbon Systems. And I know a number of TechTribe users use them, and they've slotted themselves in the channel in that kind of space where they're channel only. They only deal directly to channel, so they'll only sell to MSPs, and they allow you to white label your own kit. But they deal with all of that back end warranty and on site support and everything really, really, really well. And so there's a few that pop up in that space. If you are getting the runaround, or if you're kind of jack of dealing with a tier one, there's a couple of great tier two ones bouncing around the place now, like Craig stuff and like Carbon Systems and whatnot as well.
Yeah.
Is there not one like an issue when using smaller suppliers though? I know obviously there's benefits to it, but there's risks there because they're a smaller supplier. Yes. And certainly you guys have seen the recent Mikey announcement with them selling out and having all their products.
Whoa.
A bit of a surprise. And so there's definitely a risk, and that's something that I would kind of, it's something you have to factor in, I think, to those.
Depend, you do. And the other risk in there as well is like when you go to someone like HP. And like for us, we standardized on the HP 600 small form factor Evo business desktop, whatever it was, for many, 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 many years. And so that meant that we could keep our SOEs up to date very easily because we had this standardized thing that just ran for so long. And sometimes you can lose that if you go to a tier two vendor out there. But some of the ones that are starting to pop up are the ones that are now shifting tens of thousands of bits of kit. So they're not kind of tiny players now. They're starting to get in that middle tier space and do, like, I'm hearing really awesome stock levels out of them and whatnot as well. So I think there's going to be a ton of smaller ones. There's going to be a few that rise through that to kind of become those middle tier boutique ones that will hold a place in the marketplace. But you're right. You've got to be careful that you're not dealing with someone too tiny that is going to disappear the next day. And then you're left carrying the bag of the warranty for the rest of the time in there. You've got to kind of find someone with some stability. And these guys that I just mentioned, I know they've been around now for kind of 5 years and have got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of MSPs throughout the US and are dealing with tens of thousands of pieces of kit, not 50, 100, 200 here and there. Like they've got some volume going through them.
Yeah. It's worth looking around.
So
just remember
Oh, sorry, Richard.
I was just going to say, Pete, you're too young for this, but some of the older members of the team, there was an adage in the 1980s, wasn't there? Nobody got fired for buying IBM. You know, for anybody who did, so I'm scratching
sure they did.
Well, IBM at the time were perceived to be the only manufacturer of equipment. And of course, nowadays, you know, anybody who's been through that realizes we've got IBM compatible equipment, and that's a little history lesson there. But back in the day, you know, corporate buyers and that, they'd say, oh, well, nobody got fired for buying IBM. And IBM would basically say, well, we're not going to be the best, but you're not going to get fired if you buy it from us.
So, breeds complacent.
Yeah. Thank goodness everybody changed it. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the Dell, we wouldn't have the HP and things like that. So, you know, it's might be a facetious point there, Pete, but, you know, I think it's worth looking around at the smaller suppliers, despite the risks.
I just want to jump in.
Oh, sorry, you go, Scott.
I just want to jump in because Pete mentioned Mikey. And that was quite a surprise announcement that happened this week. And now even the app's been updated. So as the app opens up, it goes, by the way, this is you know, dead on 10th of April. It's letting you know. But I had a call from our account manager at Mikey yesterday. And like, there's absolutely no reason for him to phone up other than the relationship that we have. And I think it goes back to what we said about building that relationship with, you know, with your suppliers and your partners. And so Paul gave us a call just to kind of, again, just run through. I mean, we've already seen the announcement. We know what it is, but he just wanted to run through it and add his own personal context to it. And, you know, that's the kind of relationship call where you go, well, Paul, are you okay? Have you still got a job? Is everything, are they keeping the UK operation? And he's like, yeah, that's cool. You know, he was really heartened by the fact that so many people that he spoke to were actually checking in on him and that, like, he hadn't been affected by this. They weren't just, you know, scuttling operations. And clearly there is a plan for whatever's going to happen with Mikey in the future as it integrates with JumpCloud. And so, but it was just, there was no need for that call. There was no need for us to catch up. You know, we know what's happening. We've got to get off in 45 days. He wasn't phoning to try and get us to stay. He wasn't phoning to apologize or anything like that. He was just, this is a relationship that we have.
I mean,
it was as unexpected
technically,
to him
nothing
as
left
it was
to
us. But there was, even though there's obviously a future for whatever's going to happen, he wasn't kind of say, hey, you know, stick around and we'll be back in 6 months and, you know, don't make any hasty changes. There was none of that. It was just a real nice, honest conversation.
It's good to hear.
But he said, you know, that there was a lot of, a lot of noise that came out that first announcement. He got a lot of vitriol and hatred coming at him. And then by the Friday, people were turned to that, oh, yeah, sorry, we calmed down. Are you okay? Have you got a job? You know, let's think about people. But the other thing that he mentioned, which just escaped my brain, oh my God,
I
had a really interesting
point
and it went, come back. No, it's gone. It's gone.
It floated up into Richard's square, who's above him.
Do what I do, let Pete talk for a bit and then just interrupt him.
Okay. I'll pick it up. If you remember, then just. So when clients do decide to go direct and they're not, they've just gone, you know, HP online store or Dell online store or whatever, and they found something that's cheaper, they think it's the right thing. I'd like to know if anyone else did anything different, because there's obviously lots of different ways you can deal with that. So something we would do is, we would always do everything at a fixed price if we sold it. If the client went and acquired it elsewhere, we would only do a pay and go basis.
Yeah.
Because we don't know if what they bought is the right thing, if it's working, because it might be a DOA when we go out to install it. whether it's compatible with the right things, we've got the right software on there. There was too much risk on that, so that we would just go, okay, well, it's pay and go. However long it takes us, we bill you for it. I've also seen some other people, maybe one of you guys, not then include the warranty cover under support. So if there was any ever issues with that machine, they wouldn't be the ones to sit on the phone and speak to Dell and raise the support case. It's down to you now. You bought it, you phone them and you deal with it.
Yeah.
Did anyone else deal with that any differently?
Yeah. We did exactly the same way as that. And we used to include, we used to say, look, if you buy the kit from us, and we used to be open about the markup. We'd say, like, we charge 20%. So if you go directly to Dell, HP or whatever, you'll probably get it cheaper. But what we do is we're going to look after the warranty for you. We actually used to say, Pete, we'll include 2 hours free setup of that PC. Because I don't know why, it was something tangible that they felt like, oh, your hourly rate is like £90 an hour or whatever. That's 180 quid. So it helps them make the calculation there. And we used to say, you know, you're welcome to go directly to them, but yeah, we'll charge you for this other stuff. And we ended up doing most of the kit directly with us as a result of that. So it's a good idea.
Yeah, we were the exact same as you, Pete, and same as you, Richard, in that it only happened to us a couple of times, and I remember those times very specifically. But we were so darn lucky that I did what you did, Pete, and said, okay, well, we're not doing it in our fixed fee, because we were always fixed fee setups as well but in at least the last 4 or 5 years of my MSP was a fixed fee install price on everything. And we started off like that one before, Richard, where we used to sell a PC and I'd throw in installation until I started running my numbers on that and realizing that I was losing money on every PC install in the operators. We ended up, like, for the last 3 or 4 years of having my MSP, our fixed fee PC install was $500 or $750, depending on whether it was standard or advanced. And that was in addition to the PC sale itself. But we were so darn lucky. And the couple of clients that did that, they went direct on Amazon or the local computer online thing and did it. And we went, okay, well, we're not this thing here, we can't do our fixed fee on it because we don't, like you said, Pete, we don't know what it is. And I can remember the two occasions that I just laughed, because one of them, they did the buy Windows Home thing. So
always.
Every second of our time trying to upgrade to Windows Pro and whatever was 100% billable. And they, instead of paying a $495 fixed fee install, they paid something like $800 or $900 to us for that particular one. They learned that lesson and always bought from us there on in. And the second one was a printer that they went and bought from someone else, and it was DOA. And again, they ended up having about a $500 because they go, oh, can you guys just deal with it? And I said, yeah, of course we can, but we're charging you for per second to deal with this stuff because you didn't buy with it from us. And again, even after that, they even swapped to buying toners from us, which they never bought to us before after that, just because of that process. And so we were very lucky in that it rarely happened. There was a few more instances, but not too many. But when it did, it always ended up in our favor because they realized how stupid it was of them to buy it and what benefits we actually did provide to that. And that then became stories and fodder for when we spoke to other clients about why it's better to buy through us out there. And so it still happens though everywhere out there. And I think it still always comes down to relationship, and it still comes down to that question that I asked before, is making sure that you are still making money on all of that services and everything else, even if you didn't sell that bit of tin in there. The bit of tin is kind of the icing on the cake. And I know a lot of MSPs right now are struggling, even with the supply chain issues right now with stock and Amazon being like clients being able to go to Amazon and get anything cheaper and faster and more in stock than anywhere else out there. I don't know. Are you guys seeing that as one of the bigger challenges over there as well, that kind of Amazon supply chain sitting in there getting in the way with clients wanting to buy direct?
Yeah, especially at the price point as well. Yeah, because right. Like you'll go to distribution and get a price, and then they'll just go on Amazon and go, well, I can get a better price.
Same part number as well, is it?
Cool. All right. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, why not?
It's probably worth
explaining. We have that with that HP happens. And their retail store all the time. And right. I think I mentioned this last time, but when we raised it with HP, they had a process to go through to compete against their online store. Literally, it was a one-page PDF process of, if you run into this issue, you follow this process. Like, the fact you have like spent the time of putting a one-pager together to give to your MSP partners surely points out there's a problem somewhere. Yeah. It was nuts. Yeah. I mean, it's great they had a process to get through, but it was one of those frustrations.
Distribution.
Because when you went through the process, you'd enter the competing price, so they then match the price, and you go, cool, we've matched the price. Oh, but hang on, where's our margin? So then you have to go back again, get them to add some more margin onto the price, knock some more money off. And like the client, like we were saying with Amazon, the client's gone from I can buy this today and have it tomorrow to like, oh, sorry, can you just wait a week? We're going back and forth between our partners, and it is, you know, the whole relationship gets busted up by that point because time's money, and they're keen on purchasing something then, not in a week's time. It's difficult, very, very difficult. Sorry, Richard.
No, not at all. I was doing it for comedy effect. That was why I was speaking over you, Pete, after what I said earlier. No, it's probably worth it because a lot of our viewers are going to be fairly new to the space, and this whole idea of distribution and the channel is going to be, you know, fairly new to them, full stop. So it's probably worth mentioning, well, how on earth can you go to somebody like Amazon and get a cheaper price than going directly to HP to buy the kit? Because it's like head scratching. And it's all to do with the way distribution works. Now, historically, we had tier one and tier two distributors. So Amazon, and feel free to correct me in the comments if I'm incorrect with this now, but Amazon would be classified as what I call a tier two distributor. So they buy in bulk from a tier one distributor like a West Coast or a Tech Data or whatever, who buy directly in bulk from HP. So you would have thought if you cut out the middleman and go straight to HP, you're going to get a better deal. It doesn't work like that for all the reasons we mentioned during today's show. They get bulk buying discounts that then gets passed down. So, you know, Amazon can end up buying 10,000 PCs for a 60% discount, whereas if you go directly to HP, you can't get that same deal. So that's the way distribution worked.
Yeah. One of the other approaches that I saw a couple of MSPs, especially there was one of my dear friends out here who owned an MSP that I'd owned for many years. He's no longer with us anymore, an awesome MSP owner named Tony. But what he eventually got to in his MSP was, especially with Australia's consumer protection laws around all that warranty stuff and whatever, he ended up getting to the point where he said, okay, my MSP from today onwards does not resell kit, full stop. We do not resell anything out there. But what we will do is we will consult with you to go and build your shopping list for you, and we will place the shopping order. We'll do all of that work for you. I think he used to put a fixed fee margin of 8 to 10% or whatever on whatever it was, and that meant that he had no liability, no anything in there. The whole lot was service fees on top, and it worked well for him. He ran that model for many years, and I know then another couple of MSPs that kind of mirrored that because they were sick of the whole taking the warranty claims on the chin. And I know there was a few of the vendors, or every vendor goes through that process where they push down their quality when they're trying to achieve price breaks, and then you get hit with RMAs every second piece of kit you get. And he was kind of sick of dealing with that, and he just shifted to this model where he goes, okay, we only make our money out of, like, we'll build the shopping list for you, we'll do all this stuff, we'll take a percent shopping list fee on top of it, which was very transparent then, so the clients could then go and see exactly what he's making out of it, and he had zero liabilities out there in terms of it. So it's definitely an approach you can take if you're in a jurisdiction like ours where the consumer protection laws are pretty tight around that kind of stuff, or if you're just jack of dealing with disties and you just want to go and just act in the best interest of clients and you're making the margins that you want to make properly out of the service side of your MSP out there.
Also, something I'll throw in there as well, actually, with when you're doing run up against these issues and you're struggling, you're not finding the right person, you're going through LinkedIn, you're going through phone, whatever you can do, events are starting to go back on again. Events are great places to go and have these discussions. Yeah. I've had so many good contacts made through going to events like Canalys a few years ago, you know, places like Datacon, like all the vendor events you can go to. Yeah. They've all got the right people there, like the very, very high up people. And I remember bumping into, I think it was like one of the directors of Mimecast when we were at one of the events. And we had a Mimecast issue at the time. So I could literally get a direct conversation going with him and trying to explain my predicament, the issues we were struggling. And we got some action made because we were physically there. So it's well worth going to these events. You know, if you've got some issues, you know, you want to talk about, and you know, those vendors are going to be there, then make that one of your objectives when you go there to find the right person and go and have those discussions.
Yeah. Jason Kemsley in the chat makes the point. He says, from what I see, many MSPs don't choose suppliers with values and integrity in mind, or even ask about it. They choose based on their shiny toys or perks and pricing.
Or price.
Couldn't agree more, Jason. You know, so many people, you know, this stuff that we talk about, relationship, and what Pete just talked about, building relationships with people, it's not a woo-woo concept. This is not like we're talking about something that's intangible. This really works for MSPs, and, you know, the MSP business is all about relationships fundamentally. So, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Pete. Get out to those events and, you know, bump elbows with people and build relationships.
Bang some noise, yep. Then you know whose throat to choke when that stuff does happen out there, and hopefully it doesn't. Right, I think we've answered every single question that could possibly be asked around this vendor space now. We've got 10 minutes. We're done. What can we do? What can we dive into here? Have we missed any points around that whole vendor thing that I can't think of any. I think that was kind of a good like that conversation there. If I had heard a conversation like that in year one of my MSP, my whole journey would have been different. My whole bloody journey would have been different. And they were all lessons learned. And I'm sure the other guys on here are the same, is that all those lessons were learned the hard way, like in the trenches and making the mistakes and realizing, like getting caught sometimes in believing things without testing those assumptions and testing those beliefs and just becoming, you're getting stuck in an echo chamber of just whoever's around you in your network. And I think as I grew in my network of influence and people that were around me, the more I saw that I could go out and actually treat vendors with respect and get treated with respect in return, the more I could go out and get margins that were 3-4 times what I was originally getting, the more I could go out and do all this kind of stuff. And so I think if anything, if anyone's on this conversation, hopefully you've got a little bit of inspiration that's helped you increase your belief circles around what you can do out there and where you should go out there. And I think as to sum it all up, it really just comes back to that relationships, right? Like it is just, you've got the best chance of winning in all of these scenarios if you invest into your relationships and if you put that time, effort, and energy. Like Richard said, being the MSP that's proactively calling the account manager, like that's being the person that's zigging when everybody else is zagging out there. And that's going to get you the best chance of getting through this, or not even getting through this, but being the person that doesn't get affected anywhere near as much as what you hear it. And one of the things I do see out there as a kind of a general observation in the MSP world is the MSPs that are always the ones that are screaming and complaining about the vendors doing all this stuff to them are the same ones that are screaming and complaining about the vendors in the marketplace. And right. I think that the correlation is not causation, right? But I think it actually is in this instance, right? You're out there screaming to these vendors and you're complaining and you're being the person that's always angry and negative and whatever. You're going to have that stuff happen to you more and more and more, because behind the scenes, they're going to go, oh, well, I'm not going to help this person out because they're not my friend. They're my enemy. They treat me like my enemy. And that's I think the biggest outcome of this whole thing to me. End rant.
Can I make a quick point as well about the, you know, I've got publicly flagellated for this before, talking about alternative suppliers. You know, I'll tell a story. Back in the day, for those of us who are old enough, remember a product called Microsoft Small Business Server. No. And Microsoft Small Business Server, then...
What do you mean? We're still taking it out. It's still running.
But SBS, as it was known,
I love that
many
product.
Of us I built love an it. Entire MSP oh, around yeah. SBS.
Yeah.
So we, you know, not dissimilar, Scott, to what you're doing now. You're building around the Microsoft stack, but back in the day, around a server in the corner that ran Microsoft Small Business Server. Now, if we rewind a little bit, so SBS was a really well-loved product, and you can still hear people talk about it today.
I love
it. But Microsoft then made the announcement, I think it was about 2011, I'm going to say, around that sort of time. And they said, we're killing Microsoft Small Business Server. There is no versions of it coming anymore. And the entire MSP industry went cray cray. They were like, what? This is what our business is going to go. You're horrible people, blah, 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 blah. And I wrote a blog post, and you can still find it now. And it was like, SBS is dead. Long live a world of alternative options. And some people absolutely kicked the crap out of me and said, you are so full of it. SBS is going to go, the industry is going to die. I was like, no, there's like loads of other options to SBS, loads, but you're just not aware of them because you've only been spoon-fed. You've only looked at what Microsoft have given you. And again, this is not bashing Microsoft. Got a great relationship with them. Love the guys. But there are alternative options. So if you fast forward to the modern day, the current equivalent, and I saw Nick Smith in the chat said, looking at Azure, he said, trying to compete on selling Azure consumption is pointless. He says, it's a race to the bottom with distis living off rebates. Smaller MSPs can win by wrapping value around Azure. I would absolutely agree with that, Nick. And I would go a step further and to say, obviously, there's some cases where it's got to be Azure. It's got to be the Microsoft solution. But look around and see what the other players in the market are doing as well. There's going to be names out there that you have never heard of who are going to be a great fit for you. Now, you know, I wrote, full disclosure, I wrote an ebook recently with these guys. So, you know, I'm going to be sort of biased. But there's a company called Linode that you know, are offering alternative cloud solutions to MSPs out there. And I've been banging the drum about the alternative cloud for about the last 6 months, and people are like, oh, yeah, whatever. Linode got acquired a couple of weeks ago by Akamai for $900 million. Mm. So if you think this is a niche, it is a really big niche. And there are options out there. So again, I would encourage everybody, remember the lessons of SBS back in the day. Don't build your business around a specific solution. You want to wrap the value around it and be aware of the alternative solutions out there. And there are many of them. Rant over.
So close to a Billy. Can you imagine bloody doing, pulling that deal together? I'm just going,
oh, we just got another $100 million.
Just slip a casual $100 million there so I can say that I've done a Billy deal. Ay, ay, ay. I agree 100%. And let me just say, holy heck, I loved SBS back in the day. It was such an amazing product. Like SBS 03, I reckon, was my favorite product in the MSP space, or in the tech space. I used to, when that thing just solved so many challenges for a small business out there. It was friggin' awesome. And yes, I, for the first couple of weeks when SBS got cancelled in, you know, or when that news came out, I wasn't public about anything, and I had friends out there that were publicly lambasting Microsoft and bashing whatever, and but I was scared, and I was in the background going, holy crap, like, what's going on here? Like, what do I do? My business is, I'm going to struggle here. But that was when I was like, we quickly pivoted to going, hey, that means they're making a decision to go all in on something else. And that was BPOS at the time. And so we quickly pivoted across to that. And holy crap, that was the best decision we made ever. It's just going where the big guys can see where they're going to go and running on that coattails there. But it was a bit scary. So I get it. And that, those sort of situations happen all the time out there. They happen when we, even right now, it's happening with this whole NCE experience in Microsoft, is they're going through a similar-ish kind of scenario where certain...
You hush your mouth. It's a dirty week for NCE.
I shouldn't have mentioned the three letters on this thing, should I? Not 3 minutes before the end.
No, not this week.
My throat cut.
But we're still taking SBS out. Like SBS 2011.
Really?
It's 2022. This stuff's 11 years old. Imagine how old the hardware is that it's sat on.
I'll tell a funny story about SBS 2011. We've talked about books and authoring books, and it's a great content marketing strategy. The very first book deal, published book deal that I ever had was for a book where I wrote about Small Business Server 2011. Now, I can't remember how many chapters there was in that book. Let's just say there was 20. Got like 18 chapters in. I was speaking to my editor, and I can remember emailing them and saying, book's almost finished. When I got the email saying, you can guess where this is going, Small Business Server 2011 is being cancelled.
Cancelled.
I got in touch with my friends at Packet Publishing and said, it's over. Do you want me to finish the book? And they're like, I genuinely can't remember. If you're going to have a look, see if you can find the book, Richard Tubb, SBS 2011. He may still be out there or whatever. I still got paid either way. So thank you for the team at Packet Publishing. But there you go. Don't ever write a book about a product. Or if you do, make sure you speak to the product team and say, you're not going to yank this product before I release my book.
All right. Does anyone have any parting thoughts before we wrap this bad boy up, before anybody else mentions those three nasty letters anymore?
Only, I guess, a question to Scott, where it is probably a time at the moment. Mikey, there's a thread going on in the tribe about the alternative options for Mikey. What are some of the good ones to look at? What have you been looking at?
So the most popular one I've seen in that thread is Keeper. Yeah. Which seems to be the one that we have a great relationship with Brigantia as a distribution house here in the UK, and they resell Keeper. Right. So it is the most likely option that we're going to go for.
We've been using it for years.
I haven't looked too far. We've previously used products like Dashlane, LastPass. I know you're a big advocate of 1Password, so that's definitely on the list to have a look at as well. But the community seems to be steering us towards Keeper and saying they're having a really fantastic experience.
Right. I think Keeper's like the only one that has an MSP-focused product, because I know 1Password, and I don't think Dashlane or LastPass, I don't think they have MSP-based, where you can, I'm guessing with Keeper, you can create clients and store passwords within
the
client.
Yeah, multi-tenant panel.
Share those to your clients as well.
Yeah. And then, you know, Mikey had this nice approach where it was completely decentralized. And so there wasn't the risk that a central password repository, master password or master encryption key could get hacked and everyone would be exposed. It was one of the nice things that we really, you know, valued about it. But yeah, I think, you know, Keeper for us is where we're most likely to go. So right now I'd encourage people to check that out if they're looking for a MyKey alternative.
Just know that you might struggle to talk to a sales rep this week if you are trying to kiss people.
The Keeper sales team have exceeded their sales goals.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going to say that. Yeah. So, yeah. IT Glue and My Glue, that's what I'd certainly would be looking at nowadays. And there's one we used way back when, Secret Server by Thycotic.
Thycotic, yeah. Or whatever it is.
Really random one that I really struggled to find. I don't know how I came across it, but actually that was a really good option. It was a self-hosted option, so you can install it on your own systems.
Yeah.
And it had so many features. You could give it to clients. It had browser plugins. There was a lot to it, and it was actually quite affordable for what it was too.
You just reminded me of what we used to use in our MSP before Keeper and all of these other ones were out, and was called Password State, which was similar to that. And it was awesome because it had AD integration. So it completely connected into our AD. So all of our, and it audited everything, every password touch and whatever, all in a SQL database. And that was another awesome one back then. I don't even know if it's still around to this day, but it was self-hosted. So you didn't have to pay a vendor or anything outside the mix. Mm-hmm. You just purchased it, self-hosted, and paid license renewals each year, which is pretty good.
I would just like to make a point to all those little MSPs out there and all the big MSPs out there who are looking at password managers like Keeper. And if you're putting your password in Keeper or IT Glue, we have that option as well. And you're putting the username and the password, and then you're putting the MFA token in
right
the
next
same
door to
password
it.
Manager.
Yep.
That is not multi-factor. That is the same place.
Yep.
Okay. Think, McFly.
Exactly.
If someone gets in, they've got everything.
Exactly. I think it's good. Like the way we do it is that because we use Keeper and then we use a separate MFA tool. And the way we have it is that there is that whole security versus usability with having your MFA sitting next to some of the records in there, but it's never for anything that has got any chance of ever having a problem, like Spotify accounts or anything like that. Perfectly fine to put in there. And Spotify is probably a bad example, but things where there's no customer data, there's no financial data, there's no nothing, and it doesn't matter if someone hacked in, we'll do the reliability, sorry, the usability of putting it in Keeper. Everything else has to have their 2FA sitting off in a different system. We won't put it next beside it. But I know a couple of MSPs that do and live by that. And to me, kind of scares me a little bit, but you've got to draw your own lines where you're happy with it. Yeah. But it is a very important point because some people I see have just looked at it and gone, cool, we'll just throw all our 2FA things in here without thinking exactly what you said, Scott. Like it's not really 2FA, but it's all in the same damn spot in there. Anyway. Jason Watts says, hello. Hey, Mr. Jason Watts. Hopefully you didn't join us just then and joined in, but because you're missing out on, we're about to press the end button in about 30 seconds. But anyway, hopefully you've been here for a while. Jason is a legendary tech triber who's been around for many, many years and is hopefully going to come up and visit me one of these years when restrictions are allowed, where restrictions are lifted. But anyway, we will come up with a topic for next week. Pete, you're our exit man, whatever you call it, we should have a title for it. Yeah, Jason did just join. So anyway, hit the rewind button, Jason, and go all the way back. Rewind an hour.
Go back an hour and start again. Thank you, everyone, for joining us again. Thanks for watching. Thanks for asking questions and commenting. Make sure you subscribe underneath Scott on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, head over to YouTube if you're not already, down that way. Make sure you, where else are we? We are on podcast platforms. We're on podcasts. We do audio as well as video. So on your favorite podcast platform, on Google, on Spotify, on Apple, all those kind of places. And I think that's everything. Is that everything? Have I missed anything?
No, you will miss out on our ridiculously good looking faces if you join us on a Spotify or podcast platform. So I'd highly encourage you to all jump here on LinkedIn and make sure that you're looking at Scott hiding behind his. I've got one of those things too. I've got an original first edition.
Does it look as good as this though? I don't know.
First edition.
I just I know we're not allowed to sell anything, but Scott, you're just about to launch something, aren't you?
Oh,
yes, we did on the 1st of March. So M365 Masterclass. So I would very much appreciate if anyone wants to go and have a look in there. A quick 30-second plug would be, it is just the answers that you need for configuring things inside M365 when you need it. It's not a training course. It's designed for very busy IT techs in companies or IT techs in MSPs who like, you know what? It's been a lifetime since I've configured MAM policies or endpoint or autopilot. I just want a 2 or 3 minute video that shows me exactly how to do it. And it's up to date with today's portal because it changes every 5 minutes. Masterclass, m365masterclass.com.
Where do they find that?
m365masterclass.com.
While you were saying it, I rudely interrupted.
No, you're okay. But no, it's done by us. It's our consultants, and we're right. continually just updating the content in there. So there's like 80 videos in there right now, all like 2 minute, 3 minute, exact how to get in, get what you right. need to do, and get on with your day. That's the whole idea, because we get it. Everyone's busy, and you can't stay on top of everything that happens in the Microsoft portals, all the different portals. So we're just there like, we do this every day for a living, and every time we see something's changed, we're like, right, go and update that video right. because the portal's different okay. or the license is different. And so we're just committed to keep adding to that as much as we possibly can. Right. And you know, for people when they're signing up, we want feedback as well. Did we get it wrong? Could we do it better? What else do you want? And we'll get it all in there. But it's going really well. We've got a lot of people who've signed up straight into trials for us in this first week. Cool. And so we're delighted to see the enthusiasm, you know, from the community. So yeah, welcome. Thank you. Sorry, wasn't meant to make it a sales pitch, well, but
welcome to Vendorland.
This episode was sponsored by MSP Masterclass by Cloud Negra.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You are now one of these dirty, slimy vendors we were just talking about.
Well, in that case, can I get all the customer details and sell, sell, sell?
Exactly. In saying that, though, make sure you get a tribal perk up in the tribal perk platform for it.
I want to talk to you about that. Yeah, I've got a discount code that's ready to go, okay. so I'd love to get awesome. That in the tribal perks.
We'll click the end stream button, and I can talk to you about that right now.
Awesome.
Thank you, everyone. Goodbye, everybody. Have an awesome week. We'll Thank figure you. Out some sort of topic for same time, same place next week, and we'll see you all then.